Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, March 29th.
We're going to have a great night tonight, and for you people in Florida, we're going to have a gay night.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And that was Wanda Sykes hosting the Oscars Sunday night, poking fun and expressing dissent at Florida's so-called Don't Say Gay bill by saying gay over and over again. Now, that might have been the best thing about the Oscars, by the way, that nobody will remember because of that other thing that happened. But Wanda Sykes and Amy Schumer and Regina Hall were, oh, so funny, I thought. But Governor Ron DeSantis did, in fact, sign that bill into law yesterday. Wanda Sykes couldn't mock him out of it. Here is Governor DeSantis describing what's in the bill as he wants us to understand it, breaking it down into three parts.
First, the bill prohibits classroom instruction about sexuality or things like transgender in K through 3 classrooms. And after third grade, those curriculums need to be age appropriate. Second, the bill ensures that at the beginning of every school year, parents will be notified about health care services offered at the school with the right to decline any service offered. And finally, this bill ensures that whenever a questionnaire or health screening is given to our young students, parents receive it first and give permission for the school to give it to their child.
So that was Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday, and as you can hear, nowhere did he say that teachers won't be able to say the word gay, right? Which has become something of a sticking point for conservatives who say progressives are purposely overblowing and distorting what's in the bill. Advocates shoot back and say the bill's vaguenesses are the point. They say it's just broad enough to create a chilling effect among teachers so that no one will want to risk lawsuits by even mentioning the existence of gay or trans people in classrooms. So what sort of effect will the law have on classrooms and on people? And how does the law compare to how other school districts around the country design curricula around sex and gender issues and counseling? In New York, for example, there's a bill currently in committee that would mandate more openly progressive gender and sex ed instruction in grades K through 12. New Jersey passed new sex ed standards in 2020, requiring certain lesson plans by each grade and folding in more inclusive language. So obviously, different states with different politics are going in different directions right now. Remember when Governor Phil Murphy's opponent, Jack Cittarelli, said this in last year's gubernatorial debate?
Why does Phil Murphy believe that we should be teaching sexual orientation and gender ID to kindergartners? Why does he believe that we should be teaching explicit sex acts to middle school students?
And no, schools aren't coaching middle school students in how to perform sex acts, but that's where the debate is. Here with me now to go over what's in Florida's law and to take your calls on what the gender or sex ed or identity curricula or counseling practices are in your school is Dana Goldstein, national education correspondent at the New York Times and author of The Teacher Wars, A History of America's Most Embattled Profession. Hi, Dana. Thanks for coming on for this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, good morning.
So let me start with that applause line from Governor DeSantis in the clip, the item he mentioned about parental notification and right of refusal for any health care services in the Florida public schools. What's the Don't Say Gay context for that?
Yeah, so I think you have to look at the language of the law, and you also have to look at the intent. When I spoke to supporters of what they call the parental rights bill and what opponents have termed the Don't Say Gay law, they are very clear that what is motivating them is the desire to prevent schools from affirming children who say they are questioning their gender identity or who identify as transgender. They do not want schools to affirm that for kids if their parents disagree with that decision. Now,
What does affirm mean in that context?
Yeah, so
just acknowledge the existence of the identity that a kid says that they have, or what is it?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the concern is that if a child who's born female comes to school and says, I don't feel like a girl, I'm thinking maybe I feel more like a boy, you know, the national standards of the American Counseling Association is to accept what the child has said, you know, to assure them that having those kinds of thoughts or questions is perfectly normal and to explore with them what they're feeling. And that is not what these activists want schools to do. What they would like schools to do is to go immediately to parents and see how the parents want the school to respond and, you know, reject the child's questioning or encourage them to reject that questioning if that is the parent's approach.
So how now, unusual this, yeah. is that in national context, or what does the other side say is wrong with that? Because a lot of people are going to hear that as common sense. If a minor, and I don't know if this kicks in or kicks out at a certain age, but in general, if a minor goes to a school professional and says something intense about their, call it, you know, identity, or the bill is even broader, and I said, and I think says mental health, so that could be anything, then why shouldn't a parent be notified and have an integral role in how the school deals with that, whatever the child is presenting with to a counselor? What's the other side of that argument?
Yeah, so I think this is certainly one of the most divisive questions in American life at the moment. And when I spoke to counselors and folks who are leaders in the school counseling field, they talked about how it is a live debate and one of the most fraught issues they deal with as to when to inform parents of any kind of difficult issue that a child brings up. Parents do have existing rights, but just, you know, the ethical standards of the national association that represents American school counselors does call for schools to be affirming and accepting of children who are questioning their gender identity. That's the official policy here in New York City in our public schools, that parents mm-hmm. don't have to agree, say, for a child to use a different set of pronouns in school. So this is debated, and how individual districts, states, schools implement this on the ground is going to differ in 13,000 school districts across the country. There is no sort of one approach here. But I want to call out the language you asked me about, which is saying that parents have the right to know every mental health service that a school provides and opt out of it. And right. Governor DeSantis did accurately describe that in the clip that we just heard. This, by my reading of the law, the legal experts I've approached while reporting on this, this is not confined to LGBTQ issues, gender identity, sexuality, or any of the hot button topics that we're discussing here. This requirement that schools tell parents, basically give them a menu of all social, emotional, mental health services that are provided and allow them to opt out, could allow parents to opt their children out of any counseling services that a school provides, regardless of what the issue is. And this is a huge, huge concern for educators, for mental health advocates.
Dana, you want to go on to the curriculum pieces of it? What does the Florida law explicitly restrict or require? And then we'll get into how different that is from what's generally done around the country.
Yeah. So in grades K through 3, the law says that classroom instruction and classroom discussion on sexual orientation and gender identity are not allowed. And in the upper grades, above grade 3, it says that any instruction or discussion must be developmentally appropriate. And I think that we can delve into those two clauses, but you know, the author of the bill has said that by banning classroom instruction and discussion on gender and sexuality, the intent is only to apply to teachers' formal lesson plans. So in other words, they should not select books that highlight a family with two fathers, or they should not do a history lesson that focuses on a lesbian pathbreaker. However, you know, I think when you use the term classroom discussion, it's a lot broader than that potentially. One of the scenarios that advocates are concerned about is, let's say you're reading to second graders a book about different types of families, and a little boy raises his hand and says, I have two mothers. Mm-hmm. How is the teacher to respond to that? You know, under the, you know, strict reading of this law, the teacher should not, you know, open up a classroom discussion and say, yes, having two moms is a type of family in our community, and sort of celebrate that in any way or kind of call attention to it. And that...
Well, what are they supposed to do? Because that's a big question, right? If kids are just talking about their families, and that could be part of curriculum, I guess, talk about your family and what's important to you and your family, or maybe in those very young grades through third grade, it's not officially, but if a kid raises it, what is a teacher supposed to do under that law? If in that example that you gave where a kid says, well, I have, you know, two daddies at home, and one of them says, blah, 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 and then what's a teacher supposed to do?
Yeah, so Joe Harding, the Florida legislator who sponsored the bill, has said that there's nothing here that would prevent the teacher from just responding in a neutral or even a warm manner, that there would be nothing here that prevent a teacher from, you know, accepting, say, a short story that a child writes about their two moms. However, I think it's just important to note that because the bill is written in a very broad and vague language, there's a real incentive here for teachers to just avoid the subject of LGBTQ issues, because parents who are angry, who feel that LGBTQ issues have been brought up in the wrong way or in a developmentally inappropriate way by their own views, have the right to sue, and it is the schools and the districts that must foot the bill for that. So there is a real incentive here to avoid these lawsuits and on the controversy and you know, stress that would be caused by being caught in the crosshairs here, to simply avoid talking about it.
Then take me up the grades a little more. We talked about, you know, pre-K through three just now. Then what can they do, or what are they required to do?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the sort of vaguest aspects of the bill. It says that instruction on gender and sexuality must be, quote, developmentally appropriate, but that's completely debated what that actually means. I mean, one person's developmentally appropriate for a 10-year-old would be somebody else's totally unacceptable. One 13-year-old may be ready to discuss one topic, and another 13-year-old may feel it's a little bit too grown up for them. So, It just seems to sort of cast a very wide net.
Let's start bringing in some callers. Maria in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maria.
Oh, hi, Brian. I'm on the air.
You are on the air.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. So thank you so much for taking my call. I have a lot of thoughts in my head. I'm an English teacher in Northern Jersey. I used it. Pseudonym because I wanted to protect my identity. Mm-hmm. This is a really challenging time to be in public education. I think a couple of issues are administration needs to not cower to parents. You know, you mentioned this Moms of Liberty group. I can't help but think that this is perhaps part of a larger conservative agenda to break public school systems so that way education becomes privatized. You know, I'll just say from my end as a teacher, you know, I teach 9th through 12th grade, and, you know, so much of the literature that we teach, there's so many rich opportunities to discuss gender, sexuality, and issues like that in the classroom. But it's terrifying to think about the backlash. I'm a non-tenured teacher. Mm-hmm. You know, I could, you know, my job could be at stake if I say something that a parent is upset with. And there is a lot of pushback. I mean, we have this beautiful bulletin board in our hallway that our counselor put up to try to celebrate, you know, historic figures, figures in the culture at large who are LGBTQ, part of that community. And there's parents who have called in at Board of Ed meetings, you know, very upset about this. Which is awful. And I think, you know, I just wish that there was a way for some of these parents to kind of understand that, you know, this especially for transgender youth. I think the statistic, I believe it's 1 in 2 transgender young people consider suicide. I mean, this is a population that's vulnerable, and just we need to protect them. And that's part of what the aim of school is, you know, you're teaching all children.
What would you say to parents who might be hearing your call and think, wait, she said she's a high school English teacher. Why is it the job of an English teacher to be thinking about these things as opposed to teaching literature and writing and critical analysis?
Well, you know, that's a fair point. My response to that would be that, you know, literature is a really rich opportunity to explore psychosocial dynamics, and obviously gender is a huge part of that. You know, one of the books that is in the curriculum, Americana, that's a great, rich opportunity to teach about intersectionality. So that, you know, I would argue, like, you know, looking at literature through critical lenses, gender is a critical lens through which you can, you know, analyze literature. That's going to be part of a well-run comprehensive English class. So it's frustrating that parents wouldn't want their children to be exposed to perspectives other than their own. really the whole point of education.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you very much. So could that not be done at the high school level, Dana, under the Florida bill, books? And of course, it's almost a whole separate conversation, but of course, it's a related conversation, this push to ban various books from school libraries and school curricula. But at the high school level, could books that revolve around themes of gender identity or sexual identity not be taught in English class?
The text of the law doesn't explicitly ban that, but it would empower any parent who believes that those books are, quote unquote, not developmentally appropriate to sue a school. So it would open up the school to the possibility of lawsuits based on the language of this law.
Francesca in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Francesca.
Hi, Brian. Two points. One, I used to, I'm a mental health counselor and a school counselor, and I was a teacher, and I lived in Florida for a while. And to me, part of this is in Florida, there is this deep resistance to critical analysis and, general subtle critical thinking in the schools. And there's this tremendous pushback. And to me, it feels like this is just one more symptom of this much, much larger problem that is going on down there. And it's one of the reasons why I just didn't want to live there anymore. I have taught a lot of health classes to 12-year-olds, 7th graders, 8th graders. And, you know, putting a chill on classroom conversation, it endangers all the students. It particularly is going to endanger these trans students, but it endangers all the students because you have to create an atmosphere where the kids feel like they can say what they need to say, ask the questions they need to ask, the things they're being exposed to on the internet and wherever. Parents have no idea. A lot of parents have absolutely no idea, and they need a place to process what is going on and what they're seeing and what they're taking in. And if they, you know, kids who are having other problems, if you put a chill on the whole conversation, they're not going to feel safe to go to their teacher and say, my friend is cutting themselves. Is that okay? Oh, these seventh graders are having sex in the bathroom. I'm uncomfortable with that. Is that okay? Like, it's not just, it makes it impossible for, you know, because if the parents are holding the teachers hostage to feeling like they're going to lose their job if they say the wrong thing in class to the wrong kid, when a kid asks a sincere question and you want to have an open conversation, it makes the whole thing impossible. The whole paradigm doesn't work at that point, which is where we're headed.
For you as a school counselor, is there any example you can give us of where there was maybe a gray area between whether you should, in your own judgment, inform the parent of something a kid is presenting with to you, or if you should keep it confidential from the parent?
You know, the approach that I take that with that is I will talk to the kid. I never want to blindside a kid. And I will say, like, wow, this sounds like something we really need to figure out a way to talk to your parents about. And I will generally, you know, work with the kid until they feel comfortable that we all go together to speak to their parent or whatever. So I'm not about confidence with kids, but I'm not really about keeping secrets from parents either. If you can avoid it, most of the time it's not necessary. You know, occasionally you get a kid who will really be in danger if you bring information to them. And that's, you know, that becomes a completely different situation that you have to, you know, you have to hope that you're working with the right administrators where you can work through that. If you have a good administration that has, like, you know, like I said, good critical analysis and good thinking skills, it's one thing. But if you're working with an administration that doesn't have that perspective, it can get really, really unpleasant, and teachers' careers can get ruined by this kind of thing. And it's not okay. It puts a chill on the entire education system.
Francesca, yeah. Thank you so much for your call. Heron and Ditmas Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Heron.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hey there. So you're a high school teacher, I see?
I'm a high school teacher in Manhattan, and I a little bit wanted to push back on the idea that schools are very supportive of multiple gender identities and sexualities, even in Manhattan. And I've worked at my school for about 10 years. There's been a lot of pushback to, like, getting a gender neutral bathroom. Even, like, I don't use Miss or Mister. I use teacher as like a gender neutral, and that was hard to implement in the beginning. But even still, I have students that come out to me every semester, and more through the years, they come out as non-binary, they come out with their pronoun preferences, and I don't think that their parents know, I don't think their other teachers know, and even for myself, like, just getting my pronouns respected at school, as someone who works in Manhattan, has been very difficult. So I think just, like, I would like to see more of this idea of, like, continuing the fight forward rather than being so defensive, because I think it's a lot of made up that, like, teachers are teaching these things regularly. It's just
how
not
different,
been my experience.
How different or not different do you think it is between Manhattan and Florida, let's say, under this law, even with the limitations in Manhattan that you were describing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I haven't spent too much time in Florida. I think that it depends, like, on the community that's being served and also the specific teacher. So, like, I do feel pretty free to teach what I want to teach, and I know people in my community that are queer teachers also do. And so I assume that's different in Florida. But I don't think that this is institutionalized. You know, I don't think that all kids in New York City are receiving these sorts of lessons, even though it would be less in Florida. I don't think it's as ubiquitous as it should be in our progressive school either.
And from that item that I mentioned about the bills that went successfully or not through the New York State Legislature a couple of years ago, there's obviously successful pushback from the right, even in the context of New York State, on some of these things. So, Heron, thank you very much for chiming in. Dana Goldstein, national education correspondent at the New York Times and author of The Teacher Wars, A History of America's Most Embattled Profession, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.